This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
He's still in 97 to 99. That's a start. He has a good slider. He commanded every time he got behind, you know, like he would dot the outside part of the plate. I mean, he didn't do much different. I think he threw more fastballs this time than the sliders. And like I told you last time, the guy's tough. You know, you give him a lead, he gets even tougher. And they got a, you know, very good bullpen that can, you know, that can shut you down.
That was Dusty Baker talking about Carlos Rodon yesterday for the Chicago White Sox, who was unbelievable. He was really, really good. 10 strikeouts, seven innings. An Abraham Toro single was all the Astros could muster all day long yesterday. Seth, how concerned...
It's unsportsmanlike, in my opinion, Sean.
What, for frankly. Rodon? He's not...
Rodon, it's like, at least give everybody a sporting chance. You know, the Astros had two hits the day before. Is it really? Do you have to rub our noses in it?
He's right not now? Very hospitable, that's for sure. They were not nice hosts over the last 2 days, at least.
I don't know where they came up with the idea to have an inflatable trash can. Boy, that was original White Sox fans. Of all franchises... who got to shut the hell up when the Astros come to town. It's the one who have the only... They're the ones with the only cheating scandal more famous than the Astros cheating scandal
true.
At this point.
Like,
what the hell? Come on.
Right.
Have some self-awareness, you clowns.
What is the statute of limitations for a gambling scandal that doesn't allow you to throw shade at teams that were involved in other scandals? It's at least 102 years.
You know
least.
What? Jose Altuve is a little bit like the Shoeless Joe Jackson of this, where Shoeless Joe Jackson... banned from baseball, even though it seems like he wasn't involved with it, or at least that's the going story. And Altuve right now, it feels like that sometimes.
This is a bit of a concerning stretch, and I realize they faced some really good pitchers over the, you know, the three games before the All-Star break against the Yankees, and then the three games here in the series against the White Sox. This is and embedded in between that, obviously, was practically a whole week off for the All-Star break. But there have been some concerning swoons, I guess, Seth, for the Astros offensively. I was listening to the game on the way home from vacation yesterday, and they brought up the stat, I guess, in the month of June. And granted, this was against far more inferior pitching in the month of June than certainly what they've been facing against the Yankees and the White Sox these last two series. But their batting average was .297 in the month of June. They were averaging 6 runs a game. We're 2/3 of the way into July, granted with several days off for the All-Star game, but still, they've played about 12 or 13, 14 games here in the month of July, whatever it is. As of yesterday, they were batting .204, and that number went down yesterday, I'm sure, when you go 1-for-28 or whatever they were as a team. Is this just a blip on the radar here for the Astros? Should there be cause for concern about the team offensively? How are you feeling right now?
I feel that I have concerns about how the team's going to fare going into September, and largely not based on the lineup, but based on the experience of your pitching. You know, Framber's had really 4 appearances in a row right now that don't inspire confidence. This last, the one yesterday was not as bad as the 3 previous ones, but he's just not been the same guy. Odorizzi, I'm trying real hard because Odorizzi had, 22 brilliant scoreless innings before this outing. I'm going to give Odorizzi the All-Star game excuse, which he kind of grudgingly did himself after the game. He said, "Like, I don't like getting out of the rhythm. My mechanics felt off." And then he said, "Look, Lance was just fine. He had the All-Star break."
Right.
But I'll give Odorizzi, based on how outstanding he had been in the previous games, We'll give him that hiccup. I'm not worried about the bats. Bregman will come back. Correa is always really slow when he comes back from a stint on any kind of injured list. Now, he wasn't all that hot before he was in the COVID protocol, but the bats will come back around. I'm just more concerned about exactly what the pitching is going to look like when you have all these young arms that are going to have career high innings pitched.
Yeah, Dusty said yesterday, he said, "Hey man, sometimes you just don't hit."
Hitting is one of the hardest things to do in baseball, and we're amongst the best. And so, you know, we ran into, you know, some real good pitching, you know, the last couple of days. Giolito was on yesterday. Rondon was on today. It's no secret that they have one of the best pitching staffs and starting pitching, you know, in baseball. I mean, these things are going to happen. So we just got to put this behind us and then look forward and get on Cleveland.
Let me read this to you, Sean, and either back this up or shoot it down.
Okay.
Dusty keeps on – this is one from one of our listeners on the text line, 713-572-4610. Dusty keeps on changing the lineup for the worst for nationally televised games. Dusty Baker does not win nationally televised games. We always lose nationally televised games under Dusty. I can't wait for him to be out of here. We will not win the American League. We will not be whoever comes out of the National League as long as Dusty is our manager. He has limitations. Sorry. I hadn't heard the nationally televised angle yet.
What? What's the correlation? Why would Dusty be?
Yeah, I don't know. For one, if I went back and fact-checked it, I would guess that the Astros have actually probably won more nationally televised games than lost, just based on the fact that the Astros have been really good versus playoff teams.
Yes.
So, and a lot of those teams end up being your nationally televised games. I think Dusty's curious decisions are independent of which network is carrying them. He does it all the time. Now, lately, he's had guys that aren't hitting, guys that are banged up. He's had to shuffle things around, and he shuffles things around in a curious way. I don't particularly think it has anything to do with whether or not it's nationally televised. But go ahead, if you give me the record of the nationally televised games and tell me what it is, then maybe that's the case.
Give me the explanation for why Dusty would sit down and make a lineup and look at who's carrying the game first before this is a nationally televised game? Okay, well, Yordan's batting second then. Like I don't understand the spirit of the text, the way, you know, the text that you just read, I don't understand what the correlation is.
Does Dusty Baker seem like the guy that knows every little detail about what's happening on game day, including like who the, you know, some NFL coaches know each official's name. They know the background. They'll talk to the officials about their wives and everything. You know, major league managers the same way with different umpires and whatnot. He's never really given any indication that he's that kind of manager.
Seth, there's a chance Dusty doesn't have cable. Okay. There's like a 25% chance he doesn't have cable. Like, well, you know,
there's a chance he doesn't actively use the internet. That's for sure.
Can you imagine? They show up at the ballpark on Saturday nights. Dusty, you know that Fox is carrying the game. What's Fox?
Wait, there's more than three stations now?
Yes, exactly. 713-572-4610.
Dusty's got a nice little condo in Midtown with like a gigantic satellite dish outside of it, like the West Virginia satellite dish.
Right. Yeah. The kind that you can actually see turning when you turn the nut.
Yeah. you gotta go out and manually adjust.
Right. It has coordinates. 713-572-4610. Boy, there are a lot of people weighing in on what we asked the audience about Deshaun Watson in the previous segment. If you missed it, Seth and I were talking about Deshaun posting these workout videos, or at least workout videos being posted by people, presumably with Deshaun's blessing. And there have been a lot of them, not just yesterday, but during the couple of weeks that Seth and I were gone. Deshaun's just been out there a lot more. And the question we posed was, look, if Deshaun's got to show up and play for the Texans this year, but it's just for 1 year with whatever percentage chance they could reconcile, or move on, trade him, and start the rebuild now, what would you do? I actually put up a poll. I'll take a look at the early results in a second here, but boy, Seth, there are people weighing in, and it's crazy to think that we would have been getting texts like this back in February before all the shenanigans started with the lawsuits and everything else. Bleep Deshaun Watson, I want his bum ass gone. No, I don't want any more time wasted with Deshaun Watson. Here's another text. He's going to get hurt if he suits up for the Texans again. Keep his ass off the field. Let the price keep on remaining high and get higher. Another text. I don't want Watson in the Texans organization. Here's another one. Rebuild now. If your garbage stinks, you throw it all out now. Another text. Let's move on from Watson. Just my purely rudimentary math is he is losing the battle on the text page right now.
I think a lot of and you could see that coming is when Deshaun got into all this trouble, or when this whole situation happened with the massage therapist, you could sense the tide starting to change, because once a guy has publicly said, no, I don't want to be on your team, you can support him in that or understand exactly why he might feel that way. But then when he goes and gets him, like if you perceive or if you believe that he's gotten himself into a situation, it's also a lot easier to step away from him at that point. Yeah. And say, all right, well, look, you didn't want to be here anyway, and now I got this extra stuff that I'm just going to wash my hands of you. One of our other listeners had been saying that, hey, look, the Texans, for one, Deshaun has already basically, his legal team has basically admitted to prostitution, basically. Yeah. And the Texans typically haven't kept guys like that around. This is an unprecedented situation, obviously. Like, I don't know if you can look at precedent to this, but the point this listener made was that maybe if Deshaun had a very public religious reawakening, that Jack Easterby approved of. Again, boy, if Jack Easterby were actually the guy that brought him back around into the religious fold, then the Texans would also be more open to it. The one comment there that makes the most sense that you just read, Sean, is his trade value right now can only get worse. Well, it can get worse for two reasons. One, it can get worse because the allegations are substantiated, he gets in legal trouble, whatever, maybe HPD press charges.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that he can get injured.
Right.
But like Deshaun going out and having an all-pro season, that's not going to increase his trade value.
Right.
So that's the big risk on the football side of things, that with injury, his trade value decreases.
Yeah, to me, the reason I would vote that I want him back for another year is the small percentage chance that the two sides reconcile, and that you move forward with Deshaun Watson as your quarterback. That's it. What he put on film last year, ironically, in a season where they went 4-12, is enough for you to get max trade value for Deshaun Watson. He was not the reason they went 4-12. He's the reason they didn't go 0-16 last year, honestly. All right, 713-572-4610. Seth and I are back from vacation. It's great to be back. We appreciate all the kind words. If you want to weigh in on the program, that's how you do it. 713-572-4610. The NBA Finals are going on right now. Who are Rocket fans rooting for this week? Game 6 Tuesday, possibly a Game 7 Thursday, and a couple prominent former Rockets involved. Who are Rocket fans rooting for? I'll tell you next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Welcome back. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. We're still getting back in the groove. Seth and I forgot that Seth and I was having a great little conversation during the break, and now we're back, and you got to expect to work out some of the kinks when we've been gone for a couple.
Oh, was I on? Was my microphone?
No. You and I were just having a pleasant conversation, and apparently there was bumping music playing that we should have been back on the air, having this conversation.
Hey, that's high quality bumping music. The people were enjoying it.
They were. There was a nice smooth groove. People in their cars, not wanting to stress out right now.
Like, oh great, here comes Seth and Sean.
Yeah, exactly. So Seth, the NBA Finals have been going on, an early July tradition like no other. And have you found yourself rooting for one side or the other based on which former Rocket is playing on that team? I think when you and I, when we were down to 8 teams, I think we looked at it and said, man, all these teams except for Utah all have a former Rocket presence of some sort, either in the front office or mostly on the court. which ones are you rooting for the most, and we power rank them and things like that. I think we're left with the two that had the most support of any of those players when we were down to the quarterfinals of the NBA, PJ Tucker of the Milwaukee Bucks and Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns. Are you rooting for a particular side in these finals based on a former Rocket on the team?
I don't know if it's based on a former. I'll root for PJ Tucker because I like PJ Tucker. But it's more out of a petulant need to watch Chris Paul go out in the same way that he went out with the Rockets. Like, I need for my own sanity to believe that Chris Paul would not physically have been able to endure and persist and thrive through an entire playoff series. Because that's why the Rockets, you know, at the time, they had the reasoning that, look, he's got an exorbitant contract. Mm-hmm. He's aging. He always gets injured at the end of the year. And we can't abide by that. So it's painful for me to say it because it brings out the worst in me as a human, but I want to feel better about the way it all went down with the Rockets and believe that even if Chris Paul had stuck around, the Rockets weren't going to win with Chris Paul because he can't last an entire series.
Well, then you've enjoyed these last few games then.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Chris Paul has not been nearly what he was when he was finishing fifth in the MVP voting throughout the regular season. He's not been good these last few games.
You know what, too? My nephew likes Milwaukee. So he's like, I was visiting them, so it was easy to cheer for Milwaukee. I've relented on Giannis somewhat. I'm actually starting to like Giannis a good amount now that there's not that feud between him and Harden, or at least if there is a feud, it doesn't affect us anymore.
Right.
So, I'm enjoying watching these youngsters go at it.
Is this your same nephew that was the big DeAndre Hopkins fan?
No, that's a different one.
Oh, okay.
That's a different one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this is my little nephew, Sean. I should have taken a video of this. I didn't want to like put him on social media.
A lot of sports tortured nephews.
He's 9 years old. He, for one, during the pandemic, he decided that he's a lefty now. So his dad, my brother-in-law, Brian, played at Princeton. He's a real good basketball player, really bright guy too, obviously, but he played basketball at Princeton. And he knows what he's doing when he's helping his son out. His son decided that, nope, I'm a lefty. So he's insisted on dribbling with his left hand, shooting with his left hand. He's a left-hand dominant player, and there's no coming off of it. He's 9 years old, so it's not. And I think ultimately it's going to work out.
Oh yeah, dude.
Really? Yeah, yeah. Like, because it doesn't. He all of a sudden now, after a year of doing this, is starting to look like a lefty. But anyway, he'll sit here. This is what this kid does. In it with his summer vacation, he goes to basketball camps. Then he comes home. He watches YouTube videos of basketball. Then he goes out and emulates various people's shots or tries the moves for like 20 minutes. Then he goes back in and he watches another YouTube video. We sat there for like 20 minutes on Saturday night in their kitchen, and we would call out the name of a player and he would show us their shot.
He's like batting stance guy.
Yeah,
remember batting stance guy? Remember that guy?
He's 9 years old, and it's written. We're bringing up guys from like the 2000s, you know, like going back to guys that were playing before he was even born. Yeah, it's really cool.
If nothing else, he could build a massive social media following. I don't know if he listens to the show or not. So if he does, you can couch your answer however you want to. Are the impersonations good? Are they accurate?
I think they're pretty good. They're pretty accurate. Okay. Yeah, like his dad will kind of tweak him a little bit and everything. And the kid's got a big personality, but I didn't want to be the one. I didn't need to put him out a video and put it out there, and then, you know, like one of my verified basketball people picks it up or something.
Right.
I don't think his parents want that for him. Right.
Right. Yeah. Why lefty? Is he like a big James Harden fan, or did he just get bored and say, you know what, I'm going to be a lefty? Can you give a reason why?
No, there is a story for that, and I can't remember what it is.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
That's going to serve him well, man. When you can learn how to be ambidextrous. At 9 years old, he's going to be ambidextrous. That's good stuff. Rocket fans, by the way, are weighing in, Seth. I posted a poll earlier today. This is for the Rocket fans who choose to get up with us in the 6 o'clock hour. But you can go vote now, at Sean T. Pendergast. Which former Rocket are you rooting for to win an NBA title this week? Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, or don't really care? Winning right now? Don't really care. 48% of Rocket fans of the several hundred that have voted in this so far. Of the ones who have picked a side, Chris Paul is doubling PJ Tucker right now. I have found the support for Chris Paul by Rocket fans throughout the playoffs to be mildly surprising throughout the play. He won that poll earlier in the summer where we were asking which former Rocket are you rooting for to win a championship. Chris Paul won that. We got it down to Paul and P.J. Tucker, and of the Rocket fans that care who wins, Chris Paul is doubling P.J. Tucker in the votes. And P.J. Tucker does have that kind of vibe that makes it easy for fans to root for him. You would think he would get a lot of that Patrick Beverley everyman type support, P.J. Tucker, but a lot of folks are still in on Chris Paul, even though, A, it didn't end well here with Chris Paul.
Yeah.
The one real chance they had at a title was torpedoed. Not really his fault, but it was his injury. His hamstring got hurt. And number two, Chris Paul really strikes me, Seth, as one of those guys that when he's on your team, when he's actually on your team, you love Chris Paul. When he's not on your team anymore, he's a very hateable player.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he gets a lot of support from Rocket fans.
The way everything went down, it's just
Harden makes him a sympathetic figure in some ways?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And he actually, Paul handled that situation about as professionally as he could, I suppose, especially when he's the one being pushed out the door, or maybe he just felt like, I'd gladly get pushed out the door because I've seen enough here. But remember, he and Daryl Morey played the game right up until the very end. Chris Paul was hanging around and with Daryl Morey when all those rumors were coming out, and Rockets insiders were saying, look, people are stupid saying that Chris Paul, there's some kind of fissure in the team. Look, Chris Paul and Daryl Morey are happy as could be. Yeah, all right, great.
Till they were.
One issue I have with some of the people that are hardcore Rockets people, like the actual kind of insiders and bloggers and everything, they will deny rumors about the Rockets to the nth degree. Until the rumors come true, and then it's like, oh, everybody knew all along. Yeah, everybody knew all along that Harden and Dwight Howard didn't like each other. Now everybody knew all along that Chris Paul and Harden weren't getting along. But until that it actually happens, anybody that it suggests such is an idiot in these people's eyes.
Yeah, boy, a lot of people still weighing in on Deshaun Watson. Here's a text. Deshaun Watson saw Busby gallivanting around on his honeymoon and forgot he was being sued by 22 women for sexual assault. I don't know if that's the case, but Tony Busby was gallivanting around a lot on Instagram over the last couple of weeks. He got married, so congratulations to him and his wife.
Yeah, Deshaun being on Instagram and doing all of that right now, is it tone deaf? Is it that he just doesn't care? Or is it part of some kind of a strategy? Do you think it's part of a...
I don't know, obviously, but if I had to guess, I would say it's part of some strategy. I don't think Deshaun does anything on social media that doesn't have some sort of reason for it. And I know that sounds... I know that his methodology of procuring massage therapists was not indicative of somebody who plans meticulously with things like that. It was very, very sloppy, as you've pointed out, Seth. But I do think that Deshaun Watson, when he's posting things, I do think that there's thought that goes into reasons why he's doing it.
Yeah, see, I don't know, just because there's a generation gap here where I can't take myself psychologically to where a 25-year-old person thinks about Instagram and social media and stuff the way that because it's just ingrained in them as something you do, to where I don't know if maybe in his mind it's more just like, I got to get back to doing what I like to do. Sean, we went up to visit this skyscraper in New York City when we were on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You go up, it's this building called The Edge where they've got a cantilevered glass-walled ledge that you go out and you're 1,100 feet in the air, and you go out, and as soon as I step out of the elevator, the first thing you see are like 29 different Gen Zers like in provocative poses at various places on the ledge. And my sister and I were talking to each other like can you imagine back when you were 22 years old, if somebody caught you like taking a sexy photo of yourself or trying to position, it would have been the most embarrassing thing that anybody would have ever caught you doing.
Yeah.
But now it's gotten so normalized that nobody thinks twice about it. Like, that's how vast the difference is between us and a 24 or 25-year-old.
I shot a video standing in the middle of Times Square one morning when we were in New York City, just standing there like holding my phone in front of my face, standing there in the middle of Times Square shooting a video, lighting a cigar because it was the day after Altuve hit the walk-off. And at first I'm looking around, I'm like, oh boy, I don't know if I'm ready to do this. And then I started doing it, and nobody, people are just walking by, and it's no big deal, man.
Really? So you felt free and liberated?
I did, and I'm going to start to do more stuff like that, I think.
I couldn't do it, man. There was a kid up there that had, like, this guy must have been like a professional YouTuber or something, I would think. Yeah. Or it might have just been his Saturday afternoon.
Right.
But he had like a $2,000 camera. He had the big fluffy thing on the microphone to cut down the wind noise.
Commitment.
He had a little mini ring light. Like, yeah, he was just doing a full-on production of him telling all of his beloved followers about what his experience was like.
Man.
I can't get there, and it's really holding me back. I was like, I told my sister, I was like, go buy some art. They had a bar up on this thing, you know, so you can get really drunk 1,100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And I was like, I told my sister, like, I should be, I guess, social media-ing right now. Go get me 3 margaritas and give me some liquid courage.
Some liquid courage. Myself. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. 713-572-4610. We talked a little bit about Deshaun Watson this morning. What's the Texans' biggest question mark besides quarterback? That's next. Seth and I back from vacation, and we should remind you that Camp Casario starts next week. Starting next Wednesday, July 28th is the first practice, so we're counting down to that. We're going to have exclusive interviews out there, player interviews. Nick Casario is going to be on, I know, for several days during the training camp period on the station here.
Yeah,
so
we got to go get our COVID test on Monday, right, you and I?
I believe so. I'm still returning from vacation today.
Oh, yeah, but, okay.
It sounds like you know a little more than I do about
that. The first time in my life. Oh, you weren't even on the call with the Texans where they were explaining our tier status, right?
I was not.
You were not. You were too busy gallivanting around. I took some time off from my vacation to do a Zoom call.
How long was it?
It's 20 minutes, Sean.
Wow.
And I did it while my sister drove around Manhattan. And I just turned the camera outward so people could look at the skyscrapers going by.
So you're on the you're on the list that gets COVID tested this year. Huh?
We're on the special list. There's like a I don't know what the tiers are. There's so many different acronyms and initials and everything now. But yeah, we don't have to get tested nearly as often as you did last year.
Okay.
But we do have to get tested, and we're gonna be allowed to be kind of close to the players.
Gotcha.
I think like it's almost like not close enough that my aerosolized breath vapor can get to them, but close enough that I, you know, they'll be able to see me in person.
Yeah, yeah. We had to go every day, like even days where there wasn't practice, had to drive out there and get COVID tested in the trailer. Yeah,
that's right.
Last
year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you know, it's a labor of love, Seth. I do it for the people. So, Camp Casario getting started on July 28th with the first practice. We talked a lot about the quarterback situation with Deshaun this morning. We'll continue to touch on that. Deshaun back on social media posting workout videos. This is all going to come to a head of some sort here in the next 8 or 9 days as to what Deshaun is going to do. Aside from quarterback, Seth, what's the team's biggest question mark for you heading into Camp Casario next week?
Biggest question mark for me is cornerback.
Okay.
Because, look, I like Bradley Roby, and I think Roby will do a fine enough job. But I think that I think for the Texans to be able to make it through with this defensive line, if you want to be an average defense, you're either going to have somebody emerge out of nowhere as a pass rusher, not really just one person, but two people. But I think long term, to be a good defense, you're going to have some good cornerbacks. And I know there's some like really smart football people out there right now that might be saying, hey, look, Lovie Smith's defense is, you just got to have these cover two corners. It's no big deal. I think the NFL's changed. I don't think you can get by like that anymore. Even in a Lovie Smith defense, you're going to have to play a lot more man defense than you used to. You got to be able to have slot corners that can cover slot receivers, or, you know, starting wide receivers go down and play the slot a lot now too. So without guys that are really capable and adept at playing man defense, it's hard to be a good defense in the NFL. So that's where I'd like to see them make some growth long term and find somebody other than just Roby. And then, you know, with Roby, Roby's still a little bit of a wild card too. I mean, Roby missed a game for disciplinary reasons last year.
Yeah.
And same thing happened to him with the Broncos.
Five more for PEDs.
Yeah, that's right. And he's not going to be back until game two.
Yep.
So that's not somebody that you look at and say like, well, they've got one piece of a long term puzzle fixed. You know, and the, other than that right now, is it Terrence Mitchell? Does Vernon Hargreaves actually finally come around? I don't know. There's a lot of question marks there. Keon Crossan, I think, I think you can do some things with Keon Crossan, but he's very, very small. So cornerback is my biggest question mark right now. There's question marks along the defensive line, but I think a lot of that's going to have to be solved through the draft over the course of the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think my biggest question is on the defensive side, but it's just more of a bigger picture question. Like with it's a completely new scheme. You know, we've become used to whatever it is, you know, Romeo Crennel has been running for the last few years, you know, which is based more out of a 3-4 than a 4-3. And I know in the NFL nowadays that maybe we get too caught up in 3-4 and 4-3, that there's different packages. Look, most teams play in nickel for more time than any, the more snaps than anything else because of how pass happy the league is these days. I guess my biggest question, Seth, is what do some of the holdovers from the previous era look like on the defensive side of the football, playing in Lovie Smith's scheme as opposed to playing in Romeo Crennel's scheme? Justin Reed, Zach Cunningham, Charles Omenihu and Ross Blacklock, huge, huge questions as to what they might look like. That's my biggest question.
Yeah, and I think I think the linebacker position in general, I think there's a chance that you really get the best out of Zach Cunningham. That's one part of Lovie Smith's scheme that I think you're going to continue to see, is that you're inside your middle linebacker in that 4-3 defense. You want him to be able to be really good in pass coverage. And Cunningham has the physical ability to do it, but he's just never quite figured it out how to actually be good in coverage. Great. Comes up, makes big plays against the run. I love that part of it. He goes sideline to sideline, but he just hasn't been good in pass coverage. I think through reps alone, he's going to get a lot better at it. And then, And I actually, during my break, I talked to a couple people about Lovie Smith adapting his scheme to the modern NFL. And the theme that keeps coming up is, hey, Zach Cunningham can do a lot, but also just like this team's going to have to play with more defensive backs on the field than they used to. You're going to have a safety basically play the role of what the inside linebacker used to be, the Hardy Nickersons and the like, back when it was in the Tampa days. It's going to have to be a safety. So again, that comes back to Justin Reed and Lonnie Johnson, those guys. What can they bring to the table?
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday, 713-572-4610. Guys, what happened to Gerrion Conley? I think he's still a free agent. I think he's still out there right now.
Yeah, that was – You got a little bit of use out of him, and then that was it for the
third round pick for eight games of Gerrion Conley.
That's pretty much the deal.
Oh, my God.
Somebody else asked a question, too. Can you please answer this question for me? Why is it Caserio being interviewed and not Cully? Okay, that's actually probably a more complicated answer than you might have been expecting. When it comes to training camp, it has been traditionally the general manager that gets interviewed. Usually John and Mark would have Rick Smith on, or they'd have Brian Gain on during training camp. And then obviously we had a year where there was no general manager. It was Bill O'Brien. Well, 2 years. So I think that's why during training camp, Cully's coaching the team. Caserio can come over and chat with those guys for a little bit. I think the more important part of that question or answer would be like, okay, it does seem like Caserio's been more the focus.
Yes.
Like, about why is it Camp Caserio instead of Camp Cult?
Yes.
You know, I think that my personal opinion is that I don't think Cully was hired to be a long-term solution. I think they're Beauportering David Cully. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Texans know that it's going to be a rough stretch here, and that maybe Cully works out and maybe he does end up getting the second contract or being the guy long term around here. But I think that they felt like Cully was the right guy for this situation, that he can kind of steer the ship through some rough waters and establish the right kind of culture. But I don't know if they anticipate him being here long term. Whereas with Caserio's got one of the highest paying long-term general manager contracts in the NFL right now.
Yeah,
they expect him to be here a while.
And we know the owner thinks that Caserio hung the moon. Like, he's very, he has great respect for Nick Caserio's intelligence and his football acumen. And yeah, I would just say if you're wondering, okay, why are you guys calling it Camp Caserio and not Camp Culley? You know, he's the head coach or whatever. Just, you tell me how it feels. Like, does this feel like David Culley's team right now, or does this feel like Nick Caserio's team right now? Feels like Nick Caserio's team right now. That's what it
feels
like. It's
a weird look. It's one of many situations about this Texans team that is just weird. That's how I should answer that question, Sean. Hey, why is it Camp Caserio instead of Camp Culley? Because things are weird, man. Yeah. Things are really weird right now with the Texans. I mean, look, Jack Easterby tweeted out this weekend, and I don't know how many team development guys there even are in the NFL, but whether you want to call it like a glorified character coach or a quasi general manager, assistant GM or whatever, man, it was not a pleasant response.
I've got the tweet. You want to read it?
Fans.
You want to read the tweet? As long as you're bringing it up. This is a tweet from Jack Easterby from over the weekend. This was yesterday morning at 8:56 a.m. Prosperity tests, adversity prepares, purpose motivates, accountability grows, love sustains, grace refuels, truth endures. So that's about 8 or 9 very short sentences there, and it got several hundred replies, none of which were, you know what, Jack, those are good thoughts.
I agree. honestly, like I know what the response is going to be usually with that stuff. I was kind of flabbergasted at how many responses they were and like how universally negative they were. And I get it. I understand it. Don't care. I'm with you on a lot of the responses, but it's just, that's one of the weird things about the Texans. You've got a former character coach who's got a reportedly $3 million a year old salary, who negotiated Deshaun Watson's contract, who was the assistant GM for some spell of time. And I don't know if there's anybody else like that in the NFL right now. And certainly if there is, they're not as notably despised as Jack Easterby is by the fan base.
You know, what I found interesting with the replies, and I'm not going to sit here and read all of them. They're what you'd think they are. Some of them are humorous. Some of them are sarcastic. Some of them are very angry. I was surprised by how many mention season tickets. And how many mention either canceling season tickets or getting to the top of the wait list and saying no to season tickets? That would be the kind of thing that would be eye-opening to me. And again, this is a very small sliver of what I think is still a large fan base, but it's a large, probably very dissatisfied fan base right now, or at least nervous fan base. I was surprised how many mentioned that part of it, that, you know, like replies like season tickets canceled, or congratulations, you tanked season ticket sales, or I got to the top of the list after waiting 13 years and I didn't buy. A lot of replies about season tickets.
Sean, you know what's interesting about that? When I was up at the my niece's softball game this weekend, I told you, it was in New Jersey, you know, right outside is Montclair, New Jersey, which is a lovely little town.
Yes.
But a lot of Yankees fans there, a lot of Jets fans, a lot of Giants fans. Two things happened. One, well, there's a story about a Judge fan that I'll say during headlines. But two was, I sat next to a young woman who's working in the Jets ticket office. Mm-hmm. And it's her first job out of college, and she has to cold call former season ticket holders for the Jets. And she said that she basically just gets a barrage of people who are furious at the Jets, and they don't care about a new young quarterback or anything else like that. They just don't like the Jets. Like, they hate the organization.
Yeah.
And no, she says people all the time will say, like, I'll buy them from StubHub, but I'm not going to buy them from you. You're not getting any extra money out of me. And that goes back to, like, when MetLife Stadium first came on board and people didn't want to pay for the PSLs.
PSLs, yeah.
But it also doesn't help that the team hasn't been good in that time either. Like, when teams these days, especially, I think, when they have so many options, when fans get really genuinely pissed at a franchise, I don't think it goes away real quickly.
No.
And I think the Texans got to be pretty concerned about what exactly is happening in their season ticket wait list right now.
Yeah.
Which is, as far as I can tell, like, relatively non-existent. Is there a wait list anymore?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there is or not. All I know is I see advertisements that you can buy Texans season tickets. That would indicate to me that whatever wait list there is very, very minimal, probably.
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen the Texans ever do that before, right? They weren't. Why would you advertise buying season tickets when you had a wait list that was tens of thousands of people deep. I've told the story, Seth. I signed up for the wait list back in 2011 or 2012. This is before I got over to Sports Radio 610, thinking that, hey, someday I'll buy season tickets. Obviously, that changed once I got here and I was part of the game day presentation. But for years, I was well above 10,000 on the wait list. Eventually, a couple of years ago, I had worked my way up to about 5,500, 6,000 on the wait list, and then I was stuck. Once Deshaun Watson started balling out, you get an update as to where you're on the wait list. I didn't move for years, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and this is before all the Deshaun trade stuff, this was during the pandemic, I got a call that I had moved to the top of the list. You know, the pandemic was doing a bad enough number on everybody economically, but then you compound the problem with what I think a lot of people see as poor decision-making, you know, when it comes to either hiring or decisions that turned off Deshaun Watson. And now Deshaun's got a whole nother set of things that have turned the fan base against him now. Now everybody hates everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's the team and Deshaun everybody's mad at right now.
Well, and the you know, like the news that happened while we were on vacation that I didn't anticipate being as, like, it looked on social media like it was talked about quite a bit, was the Texans deciding to only allow season ticket holders into the training camp practices. I think like that's another sign of the times of where people are with that. I don't know. I'd have to look and see how many other teams have a policy like that in training camp. I think under normal circumstances, I don't think that would be as big a deal. Under these current circumstances, I see why it's that big a deal. Like, it feels like, I think to a lot of people in the fan base, it feels like, wait a second, why is this team that should be bending over backwards to try to invite people to get closer to the team is giving the stiff arm to people who aren't already paying money.
Yeah.
So I get it. It's just it's one more thing to answer the previous question from a few minutes ago. It's just weird. Everything's weird about the Texans.
Everything's
right now.
Weird. Yep. All right. Let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Astros lose yesterday 4-0 to the Chicago White Sox. Carlos Rodon was amazing. Second time he's pitched well against the Astros this year. He also pitched at Minute Maid Park. He was the starting pitcher for the White Sox in the game where Yordan hit the walk-off double and the Astros won 2-1. So he's had the Astros number. If you're starting to look ahead to the postseason, you know, the White Sox are going to be a team that's probably in the postseason. You're starting to look ahead at pitchers you don't want to face in the postseason if you're the Astros. I would say Rodon is at the top of the list. Dusty Baker said yesterday he was really, really good.
Well, he's throwing 97 to 99. That's a start. He has a good slider. He commanded every time he got behind. You know, like he would dot the outside part of the plate. I mean, he didn't do much different. I think he threw more fastballs this time than sliders. And like I told you last time, the guy's tough. You know, you give him a lead, he gets even tougher. And they got a, you know, very good bullpen that can, you know, that can shut you down.
Ooh, talk about the slider. That one yesterday, there was one, and I can't remember if this was on the White Sox broadcast or the Astros broadcast where they showed it, but it's one slider where it looked like when Altuve started the swing, it was like dead center in the zone, and then it ends up almost hitting him.
Yeah.
He was just if it weren't for the fact that the Astros only had two hits the day before, I would have chalked that one up to like, well, look, sometimes it happens. But now they've got multiple guys that are just not hitting well right now, and it's not feeling all that
well.
Awesome.
And this goes back to before the All-Star break, Seth. Like, if it weren't for that six-run ninth against the Yankees, you're talking about a three-game sweep where the bats were dead for that.
Yeah.
You know, they put one good inning together against the Yankees in a three-game series, and now against the White Sox, I mean, yeah, they scored seven runs on Friday night, but the last two games have been ridiculously poor.
But, as multiple people have pointed out, at least versus the Yankees, the Astros did what they have been doing this season. It was just, they were bad versus bad teams.
Yeah.
But the White Sox are a genuinely good team.
Right,
that's why it's
exactly.
That's why it's dismaying.
Yeah, yeah. So the Astros now still 3.5 game lead in the AL West, so not all is lost here. And they have the Cleveland Indians come into town today, and the pitching matchups in this series really favor the Astros. I was watching the post game. We got home right towards the end of the game yesterday, Seth, from vacation, and I was watching the post game on AT&T, and the pitching matchups really favor the Astros in this. The Indians are starting three guys who I think have combined for three wins all year. All their ERAs are 5, 6, 7. The Astros have Greinke And who else do they have going? They got Garcia going in this, and I forget one other. Maybe Lance is pitching the third. I can't remember. But the Astros, should knock on wood, hopefully get well in these next three games against the Cleveland Indians. So,
You know what I'm a little bit disappointed about at this point was I feel like we kind of got teased with Bregman a bit. Didn't it feel before the All-Star break like a Bregman rehab assignment was imminent? Like it was.
Yeah,
just gonna...
he was making noise about, hey, if it was a playoff game, he'd be out there playing. From
right, I thought you and I would be rolling out to Sugarland to be watching like Bregman this week or something. And I think that's been pulled back a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I think they're on the road this week. And the only reason I know that is that Pedro Leon, the prospect, 23-year-old prospect who might wind up being the starting shortstop for this team next year, just got called up from Double A to Triple A. So you and I need to make a Payne and Pendergast scouting visit to Constellation Field sometime soon to watch Mr. Leon.
Because when are they playing Albuquerque? Because that was the big thing that they said with Bregman was he's going to get to go back and
They're playing them tonight. I know Leon's first game is supposed to be against Albuquerque in Albuquerque, so I'm assuming that's the series that they're in. This week that they're that
so
they're,
so Bregman as far as we know Bregman okay all right
this I've not seen I'm, any Bregman news
we're on Bregman and Leon watch right now
that's right moving on in headlines. Did you see, Seth, that a Yankee fan was banned for life for throwing a baseball that was meant for a Red Sox fan at Yankee Stadium? If you missed this story, Alex Verdugo is the left fielder for the Boston Red Sox. And he tossed a ball into the stands for a young fan, I guess a Red Sox fan, sitting
there. He was tossing the ball to a Red Sox fan in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. And the ball was intercepted by a Yankee fan who then threw the ball at Alex Verdugo.
Yeah, that hit him in the back.
And hit him in the back. Yeah, they couldn't even throw the ball at him while Verdugo's facing him. He waited till Verdugo turned around, threw the ball at him. That fan has rightfully been banned from all MLB stadiums for life.
Yeah. I feel like the banning for life, I wonder, that seems like something that maybe, you know, like a few years from now, they kind of, with no fanfare, they might say, like, okay, cool, you're good, you haven't run afoul of the law or anything.
How did track that with that guy? He's just some dude walking around in society. What,
I don't know.
Because he didn't commit
a
felony? He's allowed back in the games?
Is he banned from baseball or banned from, banned from the Yankee Stadium?
I'll read it to you. The fan who hit Red Sox left fielder Alex Verdugo, this is from the Associated Press, has been banned for life from attending major league games.
I'm going to say I'm going to stick up for this guy. I'm going to stick up for this Yankees fan. I'm going to say I think he meant to throw the ball back on the field, but it looked like from where the people in the stands yelling, they were like pointing back up to the upper deck, right? Like, the guys on the first level, the field-level players, fans in the outfield, I saw a bunch of them pointing up above them to the second level. So to throw it from that distance, I don't think the guy expected to hit Verdugo. Now, wait a second. This is what I would argue. He still deserves to be banned for life for apparently, allegedly swiping the ball away from a young Red Sox fan who was trying to get the ball.
Yes.
Like, that's the really messed up part, was that you should, if you try to steal a ball away from a youngster at a baseball game and honestly, like, kind of permanently scar that kid's feelings about baseball and going to baseball games, then go screw yourself. You should be banned for life.
Proper etiquette is, if you're an adult and you catch a ball at a game, the first thing you do is look to see if there's a kid within 5 seats of you in any direction and give the ball to that kid.
Right, like, okay, yeah, if I'm a Yankees fan and Verdugo throws the ball up into the stands and it comes right to me, I'm going to look around and, like, assume it was meant for a Red Sox kid, right?
Right,
like,
right.
That's what you're going to do. You're going to give it to – now, it's different. If it's a home run, you throw it back on the field. I think he was trying to throw it back on the field and was a better shot than he gave himself credit for.
But he shouldn't be allowed to throw it back on the field.
Verdugo can settle the hell down too. All right, Verdugo, we really need play to stop for 5 minutes because you got a little love tap on your back by a baseball. Settle the hell down, Verdugo.
So you're saying it's okay to throw a ball back onto the field if a player tosses? Like, to me, you just touched on it. The only time it's acceptable.
No, no, no. I said it's okay if it's a home run.
It is a home run. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
If it's a visiting home run, then you can throw it back on the field.
Yes.
But if a player consciously throws a ball up to a fan, then all right, then you give it to the kid.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. We're on the same page with that one. So anyways.
Now, so the Yankees fan, the Yankees fan that I love the most was when I was at that softball game in New Jersey. And I told this a little bit earlier, but most people weren't listening. It was 6 a.m.
Tell it again. I just want to hear the impersonation again.
I'm sitting here watching my niece play softball.
Yeah.
And there's a father and a teenage son next to me, and they're having a conversation about the Yankees. And this is what the conversation was. It was a father trying to convince his teenage son that Aaron Judge doesn't actually suck. The teenage son's like, well, I don't get it. He used to be awesome. He came in, and now he sucks. He's not good for nothing. And the father's like, well, believe it or not, he's an all-star. He's actually all right. He's actually all right. I'm like you clowns. Like, yeah, I'll sit here and tell you, as an Astros fan who despises Aaron Judge, I'll tell you two clowns, he's an awesome baseball player, you idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not Derek Jeter. That's the problem. There's nothing about him that's as close to in spirit or play or anything else as good as Derek Jeter. But, yeah, he doesn't suck.
Okay.
He doesn't suck, you moron.
Be honest.
You don't have to say, believe it or not, he's an all-star. He's an all-star.
Be honest with me. Be honest with me. How hard was it for you to not interject yourself into that conversation?
It wasn't hard at all. Okay. It wasn't hard at all. I didn't want any part. I didn't want to have anything to do with that conversation.
Okay. No. I believe you. I believe you. All right. So moving on with headlines. We've talked a lot about Deshaun Watson. There is an Aaron Rodgers situation as well. And one of the biggest questions hanging over the NFL is training camp start across the league next week. We got Camp Casario starting here next week, next Wednesday. But the big question, other than Deshaun Watson, probably surrounds Aaron Rodgers and his situation with the Packers. He's the reigning MVP. We know that he's made it clear he wants to be traded. The Packers have made it equally clear. They have no intention of moving on from Aaron Rodgers. One Packer who thinks Rodgers will, in fact, be there when the Packers open up camp on July 27th, Seth, is tight end Mercedes Lewis, who, by my estimation, is one of the least tenured Green Bay Packers. Not like he's been playing with Rodgers for 15 years and he knows him really well, but he's played alongside the quarterback for the last three seasons, and he told TMZ that he thinks that Rodgers is going to show up. Quote, I think so. I hope so. I hope to see my guy there. So he thinks that Aaron Rodgers, Mercedes Lewis, is going to be there when training camp begins. I don't know if he'll be there when training camp starts, Seth. I do think Aaron Rodgers will be the week one quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. I think when the season starts, he's under center for the Packers.
You know, there's something about Green Bay. You know, the Green Bay front office has annoyed me for a long time, and there's a lineage there where a lot of these guys have been there forever, Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst and everything. So it's not like this is valid to talk about the Green Bay front office. This is like a Ted Thompson lineage of people that there might just be something about them that creates diva-like behavior out of their quarterbacks. Because why would it be? Doesn't it seem a little bit odd that both Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers would be such incredible divas and get so insulted about the way they've been treated by the front office? And it's easy to hate on Favre, and it's easy to hate on Rodgers for acting like divas. I myself have done it. But I think there is something to the fact that the Green Bay front office thinks they want credit. They want credit for some of the success.
Sure.
They really don't want it to be wow, you guys have had really good quarterbacks for two decades now, and that's really the reason that you've been as successful as you are. And I think somehow maybe that rubs quarterbacks the wrong way. But having said all that, I don't know where the only better option for Rodgers right now is the Denver Broncos, who frankly, you know, have some really intriguing weaponry for pass catchers. Like they could,
sure,
he could really do some interesting things out there. But I don't think it's going to happen because both sides will come to their senses.
I do too. I agree with you.
Mercedes Lewis, I'm just amazed that Mercedes Lewis is still around. When do you think his first year in the league was?
Do you have it in front of you? I don't have it in front of me.
It was Mercedes Lewis' rookie year was 2006.
Okay, that was Mario Williams' rookie year. If you want to put it in context to Texan fans, his rookie year, remember when y'all were debating on the radio, do they take Vince Young, Reggie Bush, or Mario Williams? That was Mercedes Lewis' draft class. That's how long he's been around.
And the reason I'm surprised he's still around was because he was a guy early on that he would show these flashes where you're like, wow, this guy might end up being like a perennial all-pro. Mm-hmm. He really might make it. But he was incredibly inconsistent. It'd be like one year he'd be really promising, the next year he'd be a complete letdown. And I'm guessing he must have had a couple of good games versus the Texans for me to have even, like, for him to have been on the register or on my radar. But, yeah, so he's 30. He's one of the oldest players in the league now, just kind of skating his way through life that way. So, yeah, of course Aaron Rodgers is his guy.
God, he was on Jacksonville forever, man. He was on yeah. I'm looking at his bio. By the way, you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. 2006 through 2017, he was a Jacksonville Jaguar, just 3 years with the Packers since then. So
he had 1 year in 2010. Where he made the Pro Bowl. He had 58 receptions for 700 yards with 10 touchdowns. He had 10 touchdowns. Never had another season where he had more than 5 touchdowns, and most of them are like 2, 3, and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
Still kicking. Good job, Mercedes Lewis.
First round.
I salute you.
First round pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, Seth, you were at least in a training camp with him back in 2007, right? When you went back.
I was?
You went back to Jacksonville.
Oh, I guess I was. Yeah, yeah, I guess
I was. He's a former teammate of yours.
I might have, well, for like 2 weeks.
Former teammate. By the letter of the law, you were a teammate. You were both employees of the Jacksonville Jaguars at the same time.
Yeah.
Thus, former teammate, Mercedes Lewis. Boom.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.